Welcome to the Mom's Day Bunker with Carrie Henson. In the bunker, you will find joy, grief, laughter, and remembrance. It is a safe place for moms to gather during the storms of motherhood, to share stories and to encourage each other as we navigate doomsday moments that change the trajectory of our path as women. Our stories contain difficult subjects that may be triggering for some listeners. These are real stories from real moms that are surviving, have survived, and are thriving after the unthinkable happened. Please take care of your mama heart as we cozy up together, take shelter from the world, and begin.
Eighth grade was humming along, things were going well, and all of a sudden, she wasn't okay. She was really moody and kind of withdrawn and stuff like that. And she finally said, "Mom, I'm not okay. I need to talk to somebody." And so I had a friend who I knew who had a son that had a therapist and saw a psychiatrist. And I said, "I think I need to take Anna to a psychiatrist. I think that it's to the point now where she needs some help." So I took her to the psychiatrist and he goes, "Oh, well, she's depressed and has major anxiety disorder." I mean, he talked to her for like 15, 20 minutes.
And what did she say to him that made him?
I have
him...
no idea. I wasn't there. I was in the waiting room.
No.
Oh,
wow.
So, and you know, she's 14. She needs to be able to advocate for herself and to not feel pressured by me being there that she can't say what she needs to say. So, in a way, I kind of went, "Yeah, that's a good thing." But he pulled me in and he goes, "Okay, well, she's got, you know, like I said, depression and major anxiety disorder. And we're going to give her these pills." And he prescribed Lexapro, which is an anti-anxiety med. And I take that. And so I have for years. My mom passed away 3 weeks before Anna was born and my dad 4 months after. So,
oh, wow.
You know, I was on my way to have a blood pressure check with Anna in our stroller and got a phone call just before I walked in that they were readmitting my dad to the hospital. And so by the time I got in, the doctor, I was just supposed to see the nurse, and she comes in and she looks at me and I just burst into tears. And she's like, she opens the door and she goes, "Bring me my prescription pad and we're not taking her blood pressure today." She was a friend of the family. So, but she was just like, "We're not going here, you know, take this." And it took me three days to take it. And my best friend finally said, "If you were diabetic and needed insulin, would you take it?" And I said, "Yes, of course." And she said, "Okay, well, then would you please just take the damn pill?" Yeah. And I was like, "Yeah, okay, yeah, that makes sense." And so I didn't really think anything of it. I mean, it's super mild and whatever. And he goes, "And something to sleep." And the kids had, Anna's had trouble sleeping. And I knew that for years. I mean, you know, when she went from her baby bed to her toddler bed, in the middle of the night, my parents-in-law were visiting. They were downstairs in our room, and we were upstairs. And all of a sudden, a very tiny little finger lifts an eyelid and goes, "I'm up." And I was like, "Oh, dear God, why?" She goes, "Because I can get out of bed."
Yeah.
And went back to bed and went back to sleep. I was like, "You stinker." But, you know, so she was... So I knew that she'd always had trouble sleeping. And so it didn't really surprise me. But the more Anna took those medications, the less she was able to function. And so it was kind of like, yeah, this isn't working. I mean, she was missing school and things like that. And so I had a long conversation with the counselor at school. And she said, "Well, it may be time to have her checked into a facility, a mental health facility, to have her looked at." And I said, "Yeah, maybe, you know, I'll call the doctor and see." A couple mornings later, Anna said to me, "Mom, I can't do this anymore. I just can't do it anymore. I need to just die." And I'm like, "No, I think you're okay. You know, we'll get some help and stuff." And so she went to the facility. They adjusted medications and stuff like that. And she came home and she did great for several months. And all of a sudden, one night we were feeding animals. We have bunnies and a chinchilla and stuff. And she was down on her hands and knees and she goes, "I don't feel good. I don't feel good." I said, "Okay, let's get up and go to bed." And she goes, "Okay." And she went to bed and it took her a little while to go to sleep. And she was like, "Mom, will you lay with me?" And I said, "Sure, no problem." And she went to sleep and I went downstairs and my husband was going out of town the next day. And he goes, what was that? And I said, I don't know. It was weird. She just didn't feel good. And he goes, okay, well, he went out of town. And the next night she was sleeping downstairs with me. And she got up and she was like, I got to find this. I got to find this. And I'm like, what are you looking for? And she's like on her belly, trying to get under the bed and looking for something. And I said, what are you looking for? I don't know. And she rolled over and just had a seizure. And it was the absolute scariest thing I have ever experienced.
What did it look like?
Her arms and legs went completely stiff. It looked like she was throwing her head back and forth. And then she bounced off the floor a couple of times. And I'm like, that kid's possessed. What the hell? Sorry. And so,
hey, it is okay. We will say whatever we want here. And we are in a bunker right now. The outside world is out there. Yeah. You say the hells and dams you want.
And so, you know, I was like, okay, this is weird, but maybe it's the medicine. Maybe it's a one of whatever.
But did you know, like, could you recognize that's a seizure?
Yes.
Yeah. So you knew, yes, like, okay.
Well,
my daughter,
with a girl that had seizures.
So you were very familiar. So you're like, my daughter's having a seizure right now. And like, so, you know, when we talk about these, like, these moments, they're shocking and we all react very differently to them. Did you jump and hold her? Did you call 911? Like, what was your immediate reaction to it?
My immediate reaction was, oh my God, she's having a seizure. And then she snapped out of it. And she came out of it. I'm like, are you okay? She goes, yeah, I'm fine. Like nothing happened. And I thought, wow, okay, maybe I'm imagining it. Maybe she's just having night terrors or something. She had night terrors as a kid. And so anybody with, you know, that had a child that has night terrors, they know that, you know, they're scary and whatever. But I was like, okay, well, you know, we're home by ourselves. Sean's out of town. Let's just see how it goes. Well, the next night she had a couple more. And so I called the pediatrician and I'm like, okay, I don't know what's going on. I want to know what this is. And we went in and this is going to sound bizarre as all get out. I videotaped her.
Yeah.
I videotaped her and she snapped out of it and she was fine. And so it wasn't like she was affected by her mind. And it sounds bad for me not to say, oh my God, I need to take you to the emergency room. But it was over. What do you do at that point?
How long did it last?
Minute.
Wow.
Minute and a half.
Yeah.
I called the pediatrician and I'm like, I need to bring her in. And they were like, yeah, bring her in. So they, you know, listened to her heart and whatever, and everything was fine. She said, okay, well, she seems to be okay, but we want an EKG. And so I said, okay. Well, they could schedule that for the next week. And she said, I want to get you into a neurologist. And I said, all right, great. I called and they're like, yep, this was the end of May, beginning of June. They're like, we can see her in October. I'm like, dude, I cannot do this every night until October. And they were only at night. So
she had this, like, she's having them daily.
Yeah.
From the first one.
She had one. And then she had a couple, and then we went to the pediatrician, and then they became like, we were having 13, 14, 15 a day.
Oh, my gosh.
And she was going to have an EKG, so that was the first step. So I knew that that was coming. Like I said, Sean was out of town, so I'm home by myself, like sitting up at night with my hands on my face, crisscross applesauce on the bed next to her, watching her sleep, just like going, oh my God, when? And so we kept track of the medication she took, which kept track of what she ate, thinking that maybe it's something that's new and, you know, what have you been exposed to recently, whatever. But then school was out. So now we're home all day and we could, because I was like, maybe it's something at school. What's going on, you know? And we could not get into the neurologist at Texas Children's till October. Well, I went ahead and made the appointment, but I was like, okay, I got to find something else. And my aunt who lives here, she goes, I have a neurologist. Why don't you give them a call and see? And I'm like, yeah, but I kind of need a pediatric one. And so She goes, just call. So I called. And they're like, well, we have a woman here who is a pediatric epilepsy specialist. And I'm like, okay. They're like, we can see her day after tomorrow. So we went. She looked at the they didn't find anything on the EKG at Texas Children's. So we go. She's like, I want to do a 24-hour one. So Anna was all hooked up for another one. But then they send you home. And then they come to the house with a video and all this other stuff. So
now, okay, EKG is monitoring the heart, right?
Not EEG.
The EEG.
EEG,
okay.
Not an EKG.
Okay, because I'm not very familiar with, I'm real good with medical terms because of the journeys I've been on, but I'm not good with those medical terms.
No, it's an EEG.
She had an EEG, and those are the things they pin to your head,
put
right?
to your head, yes.
All right, gotcha.
So,
okay.
Sorry, yes. EKGs, EEG. So they have all these little sensors that they put on your head with like this special glue and stuff, and the stuff's impossible to get out of, but... Anyway, so they did a 24-hour one. They're like, well, try to do as much as you normally do, but stay in front of the camera. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to carry that thing through my 3,800-square-foot house. You're out of your mind. So she just kind of hung out, watched TV, and just, you know. And at that point, I was already sleeping with her at night because she was like, even though Sean was home, she was like, Mom, I'm scared. And I'm like, I get that. Totally get that. So... she looked at the results and she came back and she goes, I think it's juvenile myoclonic epilepsy, which is that you have epileptic experiences while you sleep. I'm like, okay, that explains the at night thing because it was still really only at night. And I mean, it was so bizarre. Anna was swimming competitively on a club team and she was still swimming. And she was swimming 5-6 days a week for 2 hours. And so all that was great. And the seizure started and they said maybe it was epilepsy. So she went on seizure medicine and we watched her carefully and what to do. And they got less frequent at night, but more frequent during the day.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So was she still taking the antidepressant medication?
Yes.
Okay. And then the seizures start.
Yeah, and they had changed the antidepressant. They had taken her off of one kind and put her on something else when she went to the mental facility.
Which is kind of for par with that.
Well, which is fine. Yeah. Because, I mean, I at the time said, too, I think it may be what she's taking.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that would be your first thought, right? I mean,
that's
probably one of the side effects for a lot of those
things. So they changed her medicines and stuff like that. And then she did really well for a while, and everything was hunky-dory. And then she started again. And so I said to the psychiatrist when we had a psychiatry appointment, I said, I think it's the medicine she's on, you know, because you guys put her on this and you've just upped it by 25 milligrams. And now she's starting all over again. So can we please look at that? And he goes, well, you need to go to a neurologist. I'm like, I've seen a neurologist.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And she's sitting in the room and she's like, hey, how are you? You know, just as happy as a clam, 14 years old, just as bubbly as a, you know. And he goes, okay, well, he goes, so that's all I can tell you. I said, okay, fine. Well, as we were leaving, she promptly had a seizure on the floor in the room at the psychiatrist. And so I walked out the door and I'm like, where did he go? Bring him back so he can see. And he kind of came in and looks at me, had his arms crossed, his clipboard in his hand. He goes, I was with another patient. And I said, but she's doing what I told you she was doing, and I wanted you to see it. And he looked at her and he goes, yep, she's having a seizure. I told you you had to go to a neurologist. And I was livid. Well, we got used to it being juvenile myoclonic epilepsy. We spent all summer dealing with it, adjusting the seizure medication and getting things under control. She was in therapy at that point because I'm like, if she's depressed, she's got to talk to somebody and it needs to not be me. She needs to be able to have somebody that's just for her in her corner. So, and school started. She tried out for the swim team and made it. Just missed varsity by a couple of seconds. She had been a Junior Olympics qualified swimmer at the beginning of the summer, but wasn't able to do that because of the seizures going through the daytime. So
And what does that mean? Like, what are their, what are, what is the stats?
She was
going
to get, she was going to get to go swim at the Junior Olympics, which were here that summer.
How fast do you have to be for that?
You know, you're going to ask me, and
you don't know.
And I, in all honesty, I don't know. But
that's such a mom. They're like, go, baby. I don't know what they're doing.
Well, no, I knew what she was doing, but I don't know. And I don't know in which event she was qualified.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, that was so really cool. Not high on my priority list at the moment.
Of course not.
You know, I was very disappointed that she wasn't going to get to go. Oh, she had said something to Coach about it, and Coach had said, but you're already qualified and to go. And so, you know, that my biggest thing was not what she'd done to get there, but how I was going to get her through not being able to go.
Oh, gosh.
You know?
Because
I mean,
their hearts get broken.
Oh, yeah.
Hard.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, she said, I still want to swim. And the neurologist said, you can swim, but you got to swim in an outside lane and, you know, not unsupervised and stuff like that. And but then she kind of was at the point where she's like, ooh, yeah, this isn't going to go well. I gotta sit down or whatever. She could kind of feel him coming on. Like I said, she tried out for the swim team for high school. She was a freshman that year. She made the team. She made it through the first day of practice, which was before school started. She made it to the second day of practice, which was the first day school started. I dropped her off at 5:45, 6 o'clock in the morning. I got a call about 6:40 saying she's had 2 seizures on deck. You need to come get her. And I said, yeah. And she never went back to school that year.
Oh, man.
She did medically homebound, which is a great program, but not.
Well, so what is
medically
homebound? What is that?
Your child stays home, and they will send a teacher out twice a week to help with schoolwork for 2 hours a day. So 2 days a week for 2 hours. And we were very lucky to get a guy that was an English teacher for the freshman class. He was super nice and super helpful, and Anna really liked him, and so she worked for him and did good stuff. But we came to the realization that the computer made her have seizures.
Oh, yeah.
And so we said something to the neurologist about it, and they had us in – she got us into a program at UT Health, UT Medical, and they have a program that studies – does an epilepsy study. There are 4 or 5 centers in the U.S., and we are lucky enough here in Houston to have 2. So we got her in late September, and it's a 3 to 5 day program in the hospital where they're just hooked up to an EEG and heart monitors and blood pressures and all this other stuff, and they just monitor them. You watch TV, you color, you know, people come by and talk, and about day 3, they came in and they go, well, it's not epilepsy. It's FND.
FND.
I'm like, what is FND? And this doctor looked at us and goes, functional neurological disorder.
Functional neurological disorder. Okay.
And I'm like, okay.
What the heck is that?
Exactly.
What the heck?
I'm like, what is that? And she's like, well, it has to do with her brain is sending signals and they are showing up as seizures. I'm like, okay. She goes, they're what they call PNES seizures. I'm like, okay, another term I don't know. You cannot talk in these letters because I'm really stupid about this. Please explain. She goes, they're psychological non-epileptic seizures. I said,
okay, if a doctor said that to me, that would make me feel or think that what they're saying is my daughter's seizures aren't real, that she's making them up, that they're part of the psychosis. So that's just the...
Correct.
And that's what it is?
No, or that's definitely what everybody hears when they say that.
Because that's very invalidating. I would think it's very invalidating, especially when you're seeing your daughter suffer through that
and 14,
break her heart at swimming
and
be 14. And
to be told that they're psychological non-epileptic seizures and they start somewhere in your brain and they don't know where. That's basically what FND is. Unfortunately, there's lots of very, and I don't want to, you know, say something wrong. But from what we've looked at, there are lots of ways that it can happen. But basically what it comes down to is there is something going on in your brain and we're not really sure what it is or where it's coming from. And, you know, your MRI was fine and we've done all the epilepsy testing that we can. So our hands are tied. Have a nice day. So
what do you do with that? What do you do with that?
You console a child.
Oh.
Because the entire way home, she was convinced that she was doing it to herself.
Oh, my gosh.
That she was bringing it on herself. And this doctor, who is probably extremely good at what she does, and I don't doubt that at all, I was not impressed with her bedside manner. Because a 14-year-old, a 3-year-old is one thing. A 14-year-old takes all this personally.
Especially a 14-year-old girl. I mean, let's be real. It's
in general, a teenager, those kinds of things are going to come across as you're doing it. It's your fault, is what Anna heard.
Oh, man.
So they said cognitive behavioral therapy, which is basically you go and talk to a therapist every week.
CBT.
Okay. So she was already doing that, really liked her therapist, so that was great. We got through that. In October, she announced that she was ready to kill herself.
Oh, my gosh.
So back to the mental facility we went. More changes. This time she was there 10 days. More changes in meds. More changes in this. More changes in that. She had a, I don't know if the woman was a nurse or an aide or whatever, tell her, you need to get off the floor and quit writhing around because you're just making it up. Well, one of the girls told Anna this. Anna didn't hear this woman say this, but, you know, and then there were a couple other nurses that were like, absolutely not. You know, you're fine. It's not something you've made up. It's not something that you're doing to yourself. It's your body. Your body is doing it, but you are not making it happen. You are not faking it in so many words, okay? You may be subconsciously doing something that triggers it, but it's not something that you are intentionally doing. And so, you know, now the kid's not in the pool at all. She goes to practice and she's got a couple of swim meets here and there, but she doesn't have the stamina to last. So she's kind of given up on swim altogether, which was her love. I mean, she was in the pool 14 hours a week, you know, training and swimming and loving it. She's not in school because she's basically being homeschooled. Coming back to that homebound, medically homebound thing means that you cannot be on campus
at all.
Okay. So that means you cannot go to the football game, even if your parents are with you. You cannot go see a play. You cannot support your friends in any of their club activities or anything like that. Which, in my opinion, is incorrect for a teen. I mean, if you have a broken leg and you're at home with your leg up and you can't get to school, you probably could be put in a wheelchair and taken to a football game to see your friends and whatever, but you're not allowed. So that shut her down socially. So then she was even more determined to go back to swim. So she would go to swim 3 or 4 days a week, but she would sit on the side. She would dry land. She would talk to everybody and whatever. She would have a seizure here or there. You know, coach would call and go, okay, she's had two. Time to come get her. You know, I'm like, okay, no problem. Yeah, they made every accommodation for her. They're still making accommodations for her. They still, we're not actively club members anymore, but she called a couple of weeks ago and was like, can I come try? And they're like, absolutely, come on down. Mm. You know, so then we went from October, from when she said she wanted to kill herself, we went round and round and 3 or 4 more times into the mental facility because she just was like, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And at one point it was, I hear voices. And another point it was, I hear, see shadows. And every time they changed the medication. And so we finally went, okay, what is this medication? What is she really taking? Well, they had her on an antipsychotic. And so I'm like, I'd like to take her off of that. and see what it does. Well, the voices were gone and the visions were gone. So, you know, and I realize that psychiatric medicines are a cocktail, but, you know, and for her to be able to deal with the seizures and stuff, she needed to be psychologically okay, or have, in Dutch you say have stone, have support.
Mm-hmm.
Not just to chit-chat, but, mm-hmm. you know, chemical mm-hmm. support, yeah. which sounds wrong, but so that she can get through it all. We've gotten to the point now where the seizures are better. We've seen she got a different psychiatrist. We saw the PA at the psychiatrist's office that we really liked. The psychiatrist we never saw again because I told the PA, I said, listen, we're back because Anna really likes you. I don't like him, and I don't ever want to see him again. So if we can continue to come back and see you, then I'm willing to do that. But if at some point she has to talk to him, we're out of here. And Anna was like, Mom. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry. I will not have him speak about you or to you the way he spoke to me. Well, one of the next times she wound up at the mental facility, he was the check-in doctor.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, crap. Here we go.
Oh, man.
The man had not known anything about her when he saw her the first time in his office and was just like, oh, yeah, well, whatever. He walked in. He said to her, you've been here twice in the last 3 months. And that really is too much. What's going on? Are you still swimming? Do you still have an outlet for your energy? How are the seizures? How is this? How is that? So he had done his homework because he did not have a piece of paper in his hand, nor did he have a computer in his hand. Now, had he just looked at it? Possibly. Am I impressed by that? Yes. Was he worried about facing me? God, I hope so. You know, I'm sorry,
oh,
but
no, I was
so mad at that man. There was nothing that I was like, oh, no.
I have fired a few doctors in my life. In my motherhood, I wouldn't say in my life, but in my motherhood, I have fired a few doctors, and I'm saying I fired them.
Yeah,
because they're just human.
They are.
You know, that's just what it boils down to. They're not God. They're human, and you have to take your child home at night. They don't take your child home at night.
Exactly.
You take your child home at night. Right. So it is what it is. But that's
and if you're gonna talk down to me because I'm worried,
like that, then guess
because
what?
I'm worried about my child's health.
Yeah.
And you are a physician,
yeah.
be it mental health, physical health,
yeah.
whatever. Don't talk down to me. I'm a grown-up. Mm-hmm. And in this case, I mean, I almost looked at him and said, do you not have any respect for your elders? I mean, we started late in life. I was in my 30s, my late 30s when Anna was born. So, but I was mad, Gary. Oh, I was so mad at that man. But here he was.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, here we go. And he checked her out and he took his time and asked the right questions and really supported her or whatever. And when we were done with that visit, we were assigned a new psychiatrist out of his office. And she's a young woman. She's probably in maybe her early 30s, right around 30, let's say. She is super nice. Anna adores her because this is somebody that says, how are you today? What's going on? What are you working on? What are you doing? How's school? I know school's difficult for you. How's it going? Anna went through a phase where, you know, every couple months there was a different hair color because she was home and that's what she could do.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
We've been pink. We've been bright red. We've been teal. We've been, you know, we were green at one point. I told her she needed to get out of the chemically induced pool. But she goes, chlorine doesn't do that, Mom. She's a beautiful blonde originally. And so she's pink and purple and blonde mm-hmm. this month. So. But, you know, I'm like, if that's the worst you want to do, I mean, you want to get your ears pierced? You want to, you know, get one of these things up here in the very tippy corner of your ear or whatever? Fine. I had a therapist suggest that I would take her to get a tattoo so that she had something to remember all this by. And I'm like, she's 15. I'm not doing that. You're out of your mind.
I'm glad you said that. I didn't know where you were going with
oh,
it.
Oh, Lord, no. I mean, I'm like, you want to put a hole in your body? Fine. Permanent ink? Not
Let's
so
just
much.
Just wait a few years.
It's one of those things, you know, I've always thought, oh, a tattoo would be kind of fun. And I'm 56, so, you know, I'm like.
Hey, man, it's never too late.
No, exactly.
I have two tattoos.
So I told Anna, I said, when you turn 18, we will go get mother-daughter tattoos.
Mm.
If you still want it, we'll do it.
That is so cool.
I don't want it on your face. I would rather have it in a place where, you know, it's yours to see and nobody else's, if that's, you know, mm-hmm. what you decide you want to do. And she said, can we go get butterflies in honor of the grandparents? And I said, yes, we can.
Oh, that's sweet. So,
so that's the plan. But anyway, so she continued her therapy. She, her sophomore year, she the plan was to go back to school.
Yeah.
She went and tried out for the swim team. She made the swim team.
Okay.
She made it through 6 weeks of school.
Okay. Well, it's better than one day.
She saw the history teacher and I think it was a math teacher twice in those 6 weeks because they were the last two classes of the day. She saw them the first day and she saw them one afternoon when she didn't get to school till after lunch, which would have been about 1 o'clock.
Does she get tired? Get tired and that's when the seizures start sometimes? Or?
Sometimes and sometimes not. And sometimes when she gets stressed out.
Yeah.
Not so much anymore. We've made great strides here in the last year. But at that point, she would get stressed out. Yes. She would get tired. Yes. She was, they found her at one point. At one point, the nurse called and said, by then we had a 504 plan, which is, you know, the medical plan at school and stuff like that. And so the neurologist had said only 3 or 4 hours of computer time a day. She can watch TV. She can be on her phone, whatever. But, I mean, really computer and instructional computer time, 3 to 4 hours. Because what it is we discovered in the year that she was home that if she concentrated too hard on her computer and watched videos for instructional stuff and you're really busy and you're close to it and whatever, she would start getting nauseated and then she would go. Mm. And so I had, she was on the phone with a friend one night and I knew she was on the phone. And I heard her talking and suddenly my phone rings and it's the friend. And I'm like, what's going on? She's having a seizure. I'm like, okay, thank you. And back upstairs I went, you know. She was on FaceTime with them, and she went into a seizure, and they hung up and called me.
Wow.
Downstairs and went, hey, she's having... So, you know, her friends are well aware. They all know what to do for her.
And, oh, that's sweet, though.
Yeah.
It's good to have friends like that, you know? So is her diagnosis that they gave you still the diagnosis?
No.
It's changed. Yeah,
yes and no.
Okay.
We saw... Okay, so... She made it 6 weeks, then we went and did online school so that she could still go to school and support her friends and go to a football game and whatever if she felt up for it. That made the social thing much better and seeing her friends, and that gave her a big lift psychologically because she was able to be social and see her friends.
Yeah, loneliness is a big deal.
Big.
It's a big deal.
And she's an only child, so, you know, that doesn't help either. This past summer, we talked about it and said, what do you want to do? And she said, I would like to do school online again this year and take 6 or 7 classes because then I only need 4 or 5 to graduate my senior year and then hopefully go back to school my senior year so that I actually have a school experience. And I said, okay, fine. You know, we'll work on that. She started online school. She's doing well. I mean, she's always been pretty much an A-B student. Mm-hmm. With being online, it's different, and there were some stuff that didn't go so well, and a couple of semesters that we've repeated, one in algebra and one in Spanish, but mm-hmm. for the rest, things were going fine. She was very sad last semester that she made a C in something. She was like, Mom, I'm better than that. And I said, do you know what's going on? I mean, think about what's happening. you know, look at this realistically. Yeah. A C is not so bad. And she goes, I got a D in science. I said, yeah, you got a D in the second semester of science, but the first semester was a B. So they average out to a high C. And you're, okay. I said, yeah, it's for the year, not necessarily just the semester. So those are the kinds of things that she's come to terms with. She's come to terms with, okay, I have these. And it really sucks. And she doesn't want to hear, oh, God, I'm sorry. She just says, you know, I mean, she said to me the other day, Mom, I don't feel good and I don't think I can do this. And I said, what do you mean? She said, if I go to this function that we were going to Friday night, she says, I will have a seizure and I will be the center of everybody's attention. And that's not what I need to do. And I said, okay. And what it was Anna Clogs. So she started that when she was about four. It's a form of dance. It's kind of a combination of Irish step dancing and tap dancing and all together. She's on a team and they've competed nationally. They've competed. They do exhibitions around the town every year. They've danced for kings and queens and presidents. And they had there was a company in town that put on big rodeo shindigs and stuff like that for out-of-town guests and big companies. They've been part of the entertainment crew for that. So she's done a lot of stuff. And to keep some exercise going, she's doing that. But we also came to the realization that when she was doing that, all of a sudden she was out of breath. And then she would, yeah. And so we're like, okay, well, you know, this particular seizure med made her gain weight. So she'd gained some weight. So she thought maybe that's what it was. I got her on a different seizure meds and she dropped the weight, but that little tidbit didn't go away. So she was diagnosed with exercise-induced asthma. And I'm like, that's so bizarre.
That is really...
Well, considering she was a swimmer and she's been clogging since she was four.
It's unusual, I would
and
think.
And then all of a sudden, here she is with this. So I'm like, okay. So like you said earlier to me, you know, doctor after doctor after doctor, and you just see all these different doctors.
The merry-go-round of doctors.
Yes.
Yep.
And so when we were at the pediatrician in February just for her, you know, 16-year-old checkup and all this other stuff, the pediatrician said, I want her to see a rheumatologist because she complained about pain in her body, just overall pain. I want her to see a rheumatologist. I want her to see another neurologist. I want to get her into Texas Children's Neurology so that everything is all related and whatever. I said, okay, fine. Well, we finally got her into neurology in September, but the rheumatologist we were able to get her into at the end of March and beginning of April. And they saw her and they did some testing and they, you know, touch your nose and raise your elbow and do this, do that. Well, turns out she's hypermobile and she had a couple other things that were great big red flags for them. And she was diagnosed with something called AMPS, which is amplified musculoskeletal pain syndrome. Or juvenile fibromyalgia.
Oh.
Yeah. So it explained a lot of the pain that she was having. It explained a lot of the fatigue she was having because the anxiety and depression were way better. I mean, they started like at your kneecaps when she started this 2 years ago, and it's like practically at her forehead as far as getting better goes. You know, she's come leaps and bounds and strides, and she's kind of our happy kid again. She has bad days, but for the most part, she's a great kid again. And this AMPS turns out that some of the givers or the things that people look for. Highly motivated kid, extremely intelligent, mostly girls that are in their early to mid-teens, self-starters, you know, kids that are very active in all kinds of things. Well, here's my now 16-year-old, and I'm going, check, 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 check. But why? Why now? Why?
I'm running it through my head and I'm like, okay, she was, you know, AB student, happy, loved, maybe had some insomnia, some And then all of a sudden starts having seizures and gets this FNB, right? Did I say that right? FNB?
FND.
FND, I'm sorry. FND diagnosis. And then now as, you know, the exercise-induced asthma and the juvenile...
fibromyalgia.
Fibromyalgia. Like what? What in the what, Petra, is happening?
Right. This
child, like, do you have thoughts? Do you have... So I call them my mommy feelers. Like that instinct, that mothering instinct, like something...
Well, when everybody kept telling us that it was all psychological, these seizures and stuff, we Sean and I both were like, we're missing something.
Yeah.
We are absolutely, totally missing something.
Yeah, because you know this child. You've known her whole life.
And the psychiatrist goes, we're missing something. Her therapist goes, we're missing something. And the therapist and the psychiatrist went so far as to say, we're missing something neurological.
Mm. They thought it was more physiologically something was happening.
Yeah, in her physical.
And there's a piece of the puzzle missing.
There's a piece of the puzzle that's missing. So then we get this AMPS diagnosis, which explains a lot of her pain because she was having pain. And we thought that it was because she was having all these seizures and her muscles would just totally tighten up. And I mean, we went from, like I said, 14, 15 a day to a year later, 7 or 8 or 10 a week. So we're coming down.
Yeah,
but
you're getting better.
To this year, after the summer, because she had them still quite a bit this summer, all of a sudden, she didn't have one. She didn't have one. And Sean and I are looking at each other going, don't say it out loud. Whatever you do, don't say it out loud. But he said to me one day, when was the last time she had a seizure? And I'm like, shh. And he looks at me and he goes, what? I'm like, don't say it out loud. And he goes, okay. But I said, mm-mm. Well, we flew to El Paso for Labor Day, which is where Sean's from, to see his sister. And we came home and a friend of hers had a birthday. And she went and spent the night. And the next day they went to the mall with her family. And Anna had a seizure. And she hadn't had one in about 3 weeks.
Wow.
And so we're like, okay. So she's tired. She's flown, she's had changes in air pressures, stuff like that. So maybe it is something neurological that maybe that has something to do with it. She's got this AMPS diagnosis. We've seen a pain doctor for that. He's put her on a pain physical therapy schedule. So we were doing that already over the summer. And they've adjusted some medications. He said, I don't want to throw meds at you right away because you're taking a lot between the seizures and the depression and the psychological and all this other stuff. And so he goes, I don't really want to throw other meds at you, but I'd like to increase this one med. And Anna goes, yeah, but it makes me so tired. And so we're in the process of changing that out for something else with the hope that it'll do, but it's a very slow process because you have to see how it works with other things.
Right.
Then we finally went about 6 days after she had this seizure on Labor Day to the new neurologist. And he says, yeah, there's more to it than just psychological non-epileptic seizures and FND. He goes, I hate that term. People tend to just throw that at things when they don't know what they're doing.
Mm.
And I'm like, you mean we've gone 2 years on a diagnosis from a doctor that's basically, I don't know, bye?
What I'm getting from you is like, it's not just 2 years dealing with seizures. It's 2 years keeping your daughter alive because she is so down on herself that she believes she's making herself do this.
Yeah.
That she is having to go to psychiatric hospitals.
Yeah.
And you're doing everything you can to keep her alive.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm mad for you. I'm so mad for you right now.
I was hot.
Oh, but I'm so mad for you right now.
I looked at this man and I'm like, so what then? I said, you know, my husband and I, the psychiatrist, the psychologist, we're all going, we're missing something. He goes, we are. I just don't know what it is. And he goes, so this asthma-induced... or exercise-induced asthma. Tell me about this. And Anna goes, well, you know, I dance and then I get hot and then I get out of breath and then I don't feel so good. And he goes, you take a hot shower. She goes, oh, yeah, then two. And I hadn't really put two and two together because she doesn't do it every time she takes a hot shower. But if she takes a super hot shower, she has episodes after that, too.
With the asthma. No, or with the seizures.
With the seizures.
With the seizures, okay.
Yeah, the asthma starts, and then 9 times out of 10, she has a seizure shortly after.
Okay.
So we're talking, and he goes, it sounds like POTS, and please don't ask me what that stands for, because I don't know.
I'm going to ask Google, POTS.
Yeah, it has...
You know what? I think I've heard of POTS
yes,
before.
Yes, it has to do with your heart. I can tell you what it is. It has to do with your heart rate and your blood pressure. And how your body regulates it. So in other words, it is in the dysautonomia family. And dysautonomia has to do with involuntary body functions, your heart rate, your blood pressure, your breathing. It's stuff that happens automatically that you don't really have control over. So your body temperature. So when you get hot, When you and I walk outside and it's 98 degrees and 110% humidity, you get hot.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, I got to cool down. I'm going to have some water and I'm going to cool down. Somebody with a dysautonomia problem, their body doesn't necessarily do that. So like when Anna has a hot shower and she starts like that, I will go down and I have ice packs the size of your computer here that one goes on her chest and one goes on her lower back, and she lays down because she's got to cool down, and her body won't, even though she's out of the shower, her body doesn't do it fast enough on its own.
But she can't, can she feel that? Can she feel like, I guess I'm trying to work this out. My, like, when I'm hot, like I feel it on the outside of my skin, right? But mm-hmm. But when I have a fever, I kind of feel it on the inside, mm-hmm. right? Does she have those, can she feel the difference?
I don't know.
Interesting.
I don't know.
But so the POTS could explain the seizures, correct? Maybe?
It could.
Possibly? Okay.
It could. But she doesn't have POTS.
Oh, listen, you're taking me on a journey here.
I know.
What is happening?
Well, girl, join me. So it's not POTS because her blood pressure and her heart rate aren't affected. And those are the two surefire signs for POTS. She has every other symptom, but not those. So the neurologist goes, okay, it's under the dysautonomia heading, but I don't know where. And we need to figure that out. Well, Anna had an episode in January where she, and we have migraines in the family. I had them, my mother had them, my grandmother has them, had them. And Anna now has them. And he goes, I want to get these migraines under control before we do anything else. And I said, do you think they're related? And he goes, they could be. And I'm like, oh, fabulous. Now I'm the one responsible for all this crap.
Oh, wow.
That was the first thought that went through my mind.
Of course.
Because I'm like, you know, we're at year two.
Yeah.
And you're now going migraines. And I'm like, well, I gave her those. Mm. And about threw up. I was like, oh, man. And Anna saw my face fall. And she goes, Mama, it's not your fault. And I said, no, I mean, I know that, but that was the first thought I had. And so he gave her, he goes, I don't want to throw, and I kind of like these doctors because they're like, I don't want to just throw meds at you because I can do that and walk away. And that's not going to solve anything. So he prescribed something called Mig Relief, which you buy over the counter, and she takes it twice a day. And it really helps. When we were in January, she didn't feel good. And we were like, oh, she's got COVID. She's got the flu. She's got strep. She's got something. I took her to the, you know, quick clinic. No flu, no COVID, no strep. I said, okay, well, can you write her a note? Because she was supposed to go to work. She was working part-time at Chick-fil-A. And he goes, no, I can't write you a note. I'm like, why? He goes, because I'm sending you to the ER. I think she's got meningitis. And I'm like, oh, dear Lord. So, okay, we go home. I'm like, pack a bag. Pack some stuff to do because we're going to be there for hours. And if it is meningitis, we're not coming home. So pack a bag. So Anna was like, well, that's ridiculous. You know, packed a bag. But she'd been miserable for a couple of days and had run fever and stuff. So we go trot off to St. Luke's, which is right by the house. And they're like, well, we're going to do lumbar puncture. Okay.
Well, okay, what is that?
A lumbar puncture is a spinal tap, basically.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
What they do is they stick a needle in your spine to get some of the fluid, because that's the only way to test for meningitis.
Right.
So they take fluid, or they attempt to take fluid, and the guy that did it didn't get anything the first time. So they have to do it a second time. And so, you know, no Novocaine, no nothing. So you've had kids. Painful. Did you have an epidural?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. It's the same concept.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
But they don't numb? They don't numb the area for her?
No, I mean, she goes, he sprayed something cold on my back, but I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
And she felt it. And so they went in a second time. Well, with a lumbar puncture, as with an epidural, there's a possibility that you can get a really bad headache.
Yes. I had one of those with my sixth one.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, those are terrible.
She already had a headache.
Yeah.
Well, no. It's inconclusive. The test is inconclusive, so we're going to have her admitted to the hospital. And we're going to grow bacteria, and we'll see. It'll take 72 hours. I'm like, can't I just go home? No, because if it is meningitis, she's very contagious, and, you know, CDC has to be involved. And I'm like, okay, great, lovely. Because, you know, just being a kid and being miserable. Okay, fine. I said, all right. I said, so do we just go upstairs? What are we doing? They're like, oh, no. We're transferring her to Texas Children's. We don't admit minors here. Awesome. Okay, fine. So I said, well, unhook her. I'll take her in the car. We'll go. And they're like, no, you need to go in an ambulance. Because if you go, if we unhook her IV and all this other stuff and you go, when you get to Texas Children's, they're going to sit you in the waiting room and you'll have to do all this again. I'm like, okay. So.
And the whole time, they didn't fix the problem with the spine, right? So she's having this headache.
Well,
is that correct?
But
or did they go back?
Really, no, but they don't. We don't really put two and two together that it's related
that's
to
what
the lumbar
happened. So in
puncture.
The moment, you didn't know. Oh, my
she
gosh.
She said they did it twice and because they didn't get anything the first time, and then they had to do it again. And they're like, okay, well, you need to lay flat. So she laid flat for 30 minutes. And,
they'll tell you to lay flat. I tell you, that happened to me with my sixth baby. And that they did the epidural, but they, you know, I mean, the epidural worked, kind of. It kind of worked during that one. But when I sat up, I thought I was having a stroke. That's how painful it was. And strokes run in my family, so it really freaked me out. I was
I can imagine.
I am having a stroke right now. I just had a baby at 37. I'm having a stroke.
Yeah.
This is
and you're like,
is
oh
happening.
My
it's
God, life's over. Say goodbye now.
They said, no, you're just leaking spinal fluid. And I was like, that's not better. This is
better. That's such a comfort.
Fluid. I was like, well, what do we do? And they're like, well, we have to draw blood out of your arm, do another epidural, and push blood into your spine to fix the hole, to fix the leak.
Yeah, no, they didn't.
And they didn't do that for her. Otherwise, it can take 5 or 6 days for your body to do it itself.
15 and a half.
Oh, my God.
So we got.
This is a roller coaster, Petra.
It is. We got transferred to Texas Children's, and we're there, and the doctors are very nice and whatever. And they're like, they finally come back. This was a Tuesday. We finally come back on Thursday. It's not. One of them is very contagious, viral or bacterial, whichever it was.
Yeah, they're pretty dangerous. Yeah.
So it wasn't the super contagious one, is what they said. So we assumed from that, it's not, let's say it's viral meningitis, and I could be totally wrong which one it is, but let's say it's the viral one that's the super contagious one. They're like, it's not viral meningitis. And we're like, okay. Well, I didn't say, so is it bacterial? I mean, I just went, okay, it's not viral, so it's not super contagious. And Anna goes, I hurt. I have such a headache. Can you possibly get the nurse to give me something? And he goes, well, I can give you Tylenol. She goes, I have had that. Dude, you got to give me something stronger. And this doctor is looking at her like, you're 16. No, she wasn't 16 yet. She was still 15. You want me to give you, I mean, what are you asking for? And she goes, something stronger than a Tylenol. And he goes, well, I can give her a Narco. And I'm like, great. give her whatever because I can see in her eyes that she's in so much pain. I mean, the blinds are closed and her eyes are tiny little slits. And
yeah, it's painful.
She hurts. So they gave that to her and it worked for maybe an hour and a half. And then she was like, Mom, can I get more? And I'm like, I don't think so. Well, so she said something to the nurse 2 hours in and they're like, well, we got to wait an hour. We can't give you anything for three at least. Really should be six. And she's like, I can't go six. You've got to give me something. So they come in with this, and it's a children's hospital, and this kid takes pills like clockwork, you know? I mean, it just, oh, I've got 14 in the morning. Okay, let me do five at a time so that I'm done. You know, mm-hmm. she just pops them in and takes a small sip of water, and she's done. And they come in with this ginormous syringe with this pink stuff in it. I'm like, oh, God. And she goes, what is that? And they're like, it's Advil. And Anna goes, oh, don't you have a pill? And they're like, no, it's a children's hospital. Everything is in liquid. I mean, that's because they deal with, yes, they deal with teenagers, but for the most part, they deal with smaller children. All right. So they gave her 800 milligrams of Advil. When we were there, still at 24 hours, here comes the doctor again. And he goes, well, I can't, that narco didn't do much, so I don't really have anything else to give her. And I'm thinking to myself, there's 8,000 kinds of pain meds on the planet. Give her something. And he's like, no, all we can do is Advil. And I said, well, tell you what. It's Friday morning. I can give her Advil at home. Tell me how much to give her, and I'll take her home. She can sleep better in her own bed. You know, I've got a heating pad. Whatever she needs, I'll be there. I mean, if all you're going to do is give her Advil and let her lay here, I'll take her home and let her lay at home. And he goes, yeah, we can do that. And I said, okay. So I took her home. Gave her Advil. By 10:30 that night, we were back on our way to the emergency room because she couldn't take it anymore. And we got
the pain, the
because
headache.
Of the pain, the headache. We got into the emergency room and the nurse says, did she throw up? I said, no. And Anna goes, but I'm nauseous enough that I want to throw up. And the nurse goes, okay, well, I'll let them know. We'll see if we can get you something for pain. We're still sitting in the waiting room. Nothing, nothing. Anna goes, Mom, I'm going to puke. I'm like, are you serious? You don't puke. She goes, no, I'm going to puke. And I'm like, okay. And she's my kid all the way because I will do everything. I mean, I will swallow before I puke. Until I was pregnant with her, I mean, I would do anything not to. And so I was like, okay, so they have these little bags and you get one. She goes, I'm going to need more than one. I'm like, okay. So she filled three and I'm just pitching him in the trash can. Here comes a little lady from triage. I hear you threw up. Anna goes, so did everybody else.
Oh, no.
Because it came from her
did
toes.
Did they ever put together that it was?
The doctor finally did.
Good
the doctor
Lord.
In the emergency room that night goes, you checked out this morning. What were you here for? And Anna goes, well, I'm sure you can see that in the chart. And he goes, well, what did they do? And Anna was like, well, they didn't really do a whole lot here. And he goes, where did you come from that they checked you in? And she goes, St. Luke's. And they did two lumbar punctures. And he goes, oh, my word.
Yeah.
And he turned to the nurse and he goes, get her a migraine cocktail.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is that? Well, it's whatever pain narcotic they'd given her in the hospital. It is apparently whatever is in, what is that? Benadryl.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's an anti-nausea medication. They gave her that, and they gave her a bag of fluid. Well, when the meds went in, within 10 minutes, she was out. And she slept for the next 3 hours. And I'm sitting next to the bedside going, are you still there? And she's not moving. She is just out cold. And I'm really kind of getting worried. And the nurse comes back. Oh, yeah, she's okay. She's okay. She'll probably sleep about an hour or so. I said, okay, hour number two and a half. The nurse comes in and goes, she's still asleep? And I'm like, mm-hmm. What did you all give her again?
I can't believe they didn't suggest doing that procedure where you inject your own blood into your spine so that it, that, ugh.
Mm-hmm. Your guess is as good as mine. And had I known that, I might have spoken up, but well, I have never been to the ER for a migraine. I mean, I have migraines. I had a migraine that lasted 2 or 3 days. And my husband was like, please go to the doctor and get something. And so they prescribed pills, but those suckers are like $18 a piece. I'm like, well, you know, you take one and then you puke and then you still have to go back to bed because you're still seeing double and whatever. I mean, the nauseousness and all that stuff is gone. So I can take one, but I still have to go to bed. I might as well just take Advil and do the same thing. So that's, and when we went for Anna's 16-year checkup, I said to the pediatrician, I said, you think maybe you could prescribe something for migraine so that we have it at home? Should it ever happen again, we can. So, you know, so that's where the neurologist came with, let's get these migraines under control in September. So she then did not have a seizure from September the 5th to October the 7th, which was the longest she had gone without one since they all started. And then she went from October the 7th till November the 18th. And when it happened on the 18th, she was, we were at Lighting of the Doves in the Woodlands. They had just danced. And she had come backstage and she'd gotten her inhaler. And I got a thing because I was sitting out front. I got it. Okay. So I went backstage and helped her. And I'm like, you okay? She goes, yeah. One of the other girls has asthma. And so she goes, I'm going to go check on Stacy when she was okay again. She went and checked on Stacy. She was standing there talking to her. And she apparently turned to Stacy's husband and goes, Corey, catch me. And down she went. It was that fast that it came on and she felt it. And she was just absolutely in tears. And the whole team was there and they're like, it's okay. We all know that you do it. It's not a big deal. We've seen you do it at practice and you're backstage. You're not on stage. And she goes, but I haven't had one in 6 weeks.
I'm sure it was very disheartening to her.
She knows her body well enough and she's in tune with her body well enough. And kind of always has been, even when she was a little kid, she'd go, I don't feel good and this hurts. Like the pediatrician learned fairly quickly that when we would come in, it was a last resort because I am not, I grew up in the Netherlands. I mean, you try this, this, and this, and then if that doesn't work, then you go see the doctor for antibiotics or whatever. So our pediatrician was a South African man and he learned fairly quickly that when we called to make an appointment, it was because it was my last resort. And so we would come in and he go, so mom, what's going on? And Anna turned to him, I guess she was about six, and looked at him and went, it's my body. Shouldn't I tell you?
Oh, she's precocious.
She is. She is. And he goes, well, young lady, I guess you're right. You should, because it is your body. So tell me what's going on. She's like, I have this bump and it hurts. And he was like, oh, yeah, that's infected. Something bit you. And she goes, well, I don't know what it was, but you need to fix it. And because mama tried this and mama tried that and mama did this and mama did that. And he goes, and mama did the right thing. So we're going to lance it. And she was like,
ooh,
okay. Is that going to hurt? And he goes, yes. And she goes, can mama hold my hand? And he goes, yes. She goes, all right, do it. I mean, but she had such faith in the man because, yeah. You know, it just... But yeah, she looks at him at six and went, it's my body. Shouldn't I tell you what's going on?
What's your favorite thing about Anna?
My favorite thing about Anna? She advocates for herself. And had you asked me this 2 years ago, I would have told you she is a bubbly, outgoing kid. And now it is, she speaks up for herself. She speaks up for herself very well. We had a 504 meeting with the school not long ago, and they asked something. And they asked me, and then they asked all the teachers. And Anna was like, do I get a say? And the principal, who for her, they call it a strand, for her division, said, of course you do. And she goes, okay. And I don't even remember what it was, but she said, well, I have done... A, B, C, X, Y, D. If you go back and look at my grades, you can see that I've done this. And I think that I'm pretty awesome because of that. And one of the gentlemen that was on the call is the testing director. So Anna, kids here take a STAR test. It's called an EOC when you get to be a sophomore or whatever it is. Anyway, she had to go take that. And before the test ever started, she had a seizure. Mm. And so... this poor man was the director of the testing facility where she was, or the coordinator. And so he somebody else called me, but he was a former EMT and has a child with epilepsy. So he has seen seizures in his life. And so I got there and I talked to her and she said, I want to stay and try again. And he said, no, you need to go home and go to bed. And she said, I need to take this test. And he goes, but you've just had a major seizure. You need to go home. You need to sleep. And I'm going to call your mom tonight and check on you. And for him to say it that way, and for her to know he was an EMT, held weight with her.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
she came home, and he was the testing monitor when she took her PSAT this year. She had had... She'd missed two tests because of seizures. And she went in to take her PSAT this year as a junior. I mean, she should have taken it last year, but she took it as a junior this year. And the college board made all sorts of accommodations for her because of our 504 plan. And she was there and she talked to him and she got through it. And she's just last week took her her English 2 EOC and got through it again. So, you know, this time last year, she didn't get through it. She had two seizures, you know, two different tests, two different seizures. But so she's come a long way and she's learning what she can and can't do. And she opens her mouth and says, I can't do that. And so advocating for herself is one of the things that I'm the most proud of for her, about her, really.
Yeah.
Because as an adult, you're going to need to do that.
Yeah,
too.
You got to do that. And when I hear you talk, because I haven't met Anna.
Oh, I can arrange
man,
that. she's already
she's like, let me in. I want to be
What's
in there
it
too.
Doing?
When I hear a child is advocating for themselves, what I hear is she's a fighter, she's mm-hmm. a survivor, mm-hmm. she is strong, mm-hmm. and she has great self will.
Yes.
She's willing herself.
Yes. And there are days where it's just like, I'm done. I'm just done. The day, October, 2 years ago, when she told me that she was ready to kill herself, my heart broke. Because I knew it wasn't because she was done living, but it was because she couldn't cope with what was going on. She had lost all control of what was going on. And for her, that was the end. It was like, it's not worth it anymore. I can't do it anymore. And, you know, teenagers, and as teenagers, we've all said, I'm just going to go kill myself. This is ridiculous. When Anna says it, and she's said it several times, and a lot of times I know she's joking, but if it's been a hard week and she says, I'm just going to go kill myself, my heart stops.
Yeah.
And is absolutely in my throat. And she says to me, Mama, you need to just accept that I'm going to say that. I'll want to talk about it if it's for real. I said, what do you mean you'll want to talk about it if it's for real and I should just accept it? I said, you said it to me at one point and... we took you to a mental facility to get extra counseling and to be watched and all this other stuff. And she goes, but I talked to you about it that day, didn't I? And I said, yes, you did. She goes, I won't do it without discussing it. And I'm like, I don't know whether I should laugh or smack the shit out of you. You know?